You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Welcome to the Drop the Needle podcast, your backstage pass to the corporate jungle. I'm your host, Jim Allstott, and here, industry titans step up to the mic, sharing their epic journeys. We're hitting the high notes and the low notes of their careers, creating a symphony of success. This isn't just another interview show. It's where truth bombs are dropped and secrets are revealed. So grab your conductor's baton, because who knows, this just might help you compose the next huge hit of your career. Are you ready? Let's go. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Drop the Needle podcast. I am your host, Jim Allstott, and I am thrilled you all decided to join us. And today, we have a wonderful guest. He's a senior human resources executive from a manufacturing company in the Midwest. Ken Bauer has a very unique background in that he comes from a skilled labor background in manufacturing first, meaning that he was out on the plant floor where he started out as an hourly employee who then worked his way up to become a maintenance manager and then on to become a plant manager, where he eventually ended up where he is today in human resources. Where this is unique is that most of the time when people are in HR, they come straight out of school with a human resources degree, where Ken did not. And this is where Ken's hands-on history has truly provided him with a unique perspective as it relates to understanding the employees he works with and works for. So in today's episode, we'll be discussing the challenges that are experienced by companies currently and as we move forward into 2024 and beyond. So, Ken is going to share some of those challenges that he's experiencing now, from attracting top talent to engaging those employees and retaining those employees. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Mr. Ken Bauer. Welcome, Ken.
Thank you very much, Jim. It's a pleasure to join you here on your show.
I appreciate you coming. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. So as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, there are a number of challenges that you and other companies are experiencing in as it relates to labor these days. As far as you're concerned, what are some of those things that you see on a regular basis?
The number one thing we're searching for, and we're talking about manufacturing and employees, where we're talking blue collar folks that want to come to work and do a good job, and they want to provide for their families. So where we are experiencing our challenges is in skills. A lot of times the high schools aren't necessarily pushing manual labor. They're not pushing trades work. A lot of it is focused on just going to the next step, which society has deemed is going to college. Right. So that is what all of schooling is just preparing for people, for the students to go to college. And that's not necessarily the best choice for everybody. Right. And I think that there we find a shortage, because there's a stigmatism around working with your hands especially with families that have the means to send their children to college. A lot of times if you don't have the means, there's not necessarily, they will not they just don't have the opportunity.
Right, no
where
choice,
if
really.
They had the means, right, there's no choice. Where if they had the means, they would definitely be would definitely go on to secondary or go on to that college education and
gotcha.
Stuff.
Gotcha.
So you have it from both ends. One, you have a group that may not have the means, and then you have others that are forced to go into it because that's what society has told them or their parents have told them to do.
Right, right. Well, I think that, gosh, even in the 60s, they had so many of the sitcoms and, 70s talking about, well, I want my kids to have it better than I did. I don't want
right.
them to do it. But the thing about that, and not to pile on, but the thing about that is you're right. That skilled labor sector is lost.
Doesn't
really.
Exist, right.
Right, right. And I see it having kids that have gone through high school and that are in high school. And I think, and I'm not sure, so I don't want to speak out of turn, but I think a lot of that has to do with maybe funding of the school programs with secondary education and teaching to the tests and things like that. Let me first of all, or secondly, say after that, throwing a grenade in the foxhole. let me say that being an educator these days is certainly an unenviable
role
to play in today's world. It's it's
you're
tough,
being
man.
Attacked from everybody.
Yeah. Oh my gosh,
by everybody,
parents, kids, community, you name yep. it. It's just really tough. So hats off to them, and I give them
Agreed.
All the credit in the world, all the credit. One of the things as part of what I do as well is talent acquisition, search,
right.
executive search. And one of the things that I've noticed is the difficulty in attracting that talent too. Even if, let's say, there is a mainstream job, just getting that person to notice your organization and
right.
why should they come to work for you? What are some of the things that you're doing as it relates to bringing that positive attention to your organization to have somebody come to work for you?
The company that I work for focuses, at least we try, it is our intention to focus on the individual, the employee, to become a whole individual. And in those cases, what we do is we offer financial assistance if they do want to go to school. We'll also offer financial assistance if they want to do trade stuff, but not having a whole lot of people coming to us about trades.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And I know that,
No,
go ahead. I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt.
No, I thought you were going to help me out here and throw me
yeah,
a lifesaver.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can do that. I'm happy to do that. So I think that some of the things that your organization and other organizations are getting to as it relates to attracting top talent is the culture, right? And we talk about culture is such a popular
yes.
word out in the industry as it relates to talent acquisition. Culture, culture, culture. Well, there's truth in that because, a lot of times, it used to be a situation where people would think, oh, we've got 15 boxes to check. And if they don't check all 15 boxes, well, they're not going to be looked at. Well, the problem with that is you can get all 15 boxes checked by a person, but that person just might not be the right fit for your organization.
Right.
And in hiring that person, let's just call it a mistake. Let's say making a hiring mistake like that, you can really do a lot of collateral damage to your organization. And I think what, your organization and other top organizations out there are doing right now is they're really digging a little bit deeper to make sure that they have the right cultural
right.
fit. And they'll forego some of those experiences that they originally
can be trained. Sure.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. If you have the right person, I think that's it, right? That's 90% of the
It is.
The job is finding the right person. And then if you did find the right person, especially, you know, in other jobs or specific jobs, if you do find the right person, they can pick up those things. Like you say, they can be trained those certain skill sets. And then you have somebody that's going to be with you for a long, long time. The other thing that I see that's attracting, and you had mentioned it, attracting top talent, is paying for an education. Those are things that are often overlooked. And you had mentioned it's not necessarily even a, you know, an associate's degree necessarily, or a four-year degree. It could be furthering the person's
their mechanical aptitude.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. By doing certification programs or certificate programs. And those are just as useful, if not more, especially to the organization. Then it's mutually beneficial. And then you keep that person on board for a number of years, which is ideally what you want.
You know, going back to your what you were saying about hiring wrong. You know, we did do a lot of that because during the COVID, we needed to get bodies in the door just to help get, you know, the product out.
Right.
And we are still reeling with the bad choices in personnel that we have. Right. Mm-hmm. They are cancerous to the other people on the shift if they don't have a good attitude.
Sure.
And they can, you know, some people will just get wrapped up in a lot of drama if you have the wrong type of individual in your building. Right.
Well, and that brings up another question as it relates to COVID. Now, obviously, everyone remembers that thing, that big disruption in everyone's lives not too long ago. With COVID, there was definitely a change, right, in how you could hire, who you could bring in, those sort of things. And you mentioned, you know, that the aftermath there on some of the hiring. But so what are you doing now? How's it changed from let's do it this way, from pre-pandemic to during pandemic and post-pandemic? You know, pre-pandemic, it was much easier. Right. I guess we can all agree.
Right. We were in trouble with skills before the pandemic and it hasn't gotten worse. But now, you know, issues have spread to other departments as well.
Right.
Whether it's the production people or warehouse folks. There's, you know, COVID in general, I think, changed a lot of people's values or reprioritized their values. And so you now see people focusing more on family. It's family and time with family, as opposed to I need to make as much money as possible so that my family can have these nice things and we can do these nice things. So that is what is changed, is that the employees, and this is generational as well as COVID related, but the employees have exchanged material things for experiences.
Gotcha.
And some of those experiences are hopping around to a bunch of different jobs, which means, you know, people don't have to stay in one spot. That's a challenge. They all want to try different things or take opportunities as they become available. So that's where we've seen a lot of difficulty. Is in, you know, people come, they think they want to work. They think that they want to work at night because we do run 24/7. So we have, night shifts.
That's another wrinkle, right?
Right. I mean, that's another difficulty. Plus you have, you know, work every other weekend. Mm-hmm. And that is just another formula that it doesn't fit with a lot of the values of the upcoming people into the workforce. And it has, you know, I think it started with Gen X. I think I'm going to call myself a Gen Xer. We started with the, is it really worth, you know, my effort in order to buy these things, or is it better not to? And that has trickled into our children and to our children's children as well. Yeah. Well, and they're taking it to another level, man.
Right. Well, I mean, and that's interesting because I was talking to somebody the other day about that. And I think that the intellect has ramped up as far as self-awareness.
Yes.
That's out there.
Oh, and, definitely.
And I think having access or accessibility is one of those things that, you know, is part of that with the internet and everything. We are just, you know, inundated with information. It just keeps, you know,
right,
flying at us. And think about it. We've got everything we need in the palm of our hands most days, which is your smartphone. You can get anything you want. And sometimes that's a great thing. And sometimes that's not a great thing, but
yeah,
I guess where I'm going with that, with the intelligence that is coming with each and every generation. And I'm sure that our predecessors may feel the same way about us.
Yes.
Right. You know, you listen to that damn music. Well, you know, what are you doing? Yep. That's crap. And the same thing goes with the intelligence, like feelings. Who wants to get involved with feelings?
Right.
You know, all right, Sally, you know, one of those things, you know, where it, well, I had a dad that was just like that. I'll give you something to cry about, you know. Oh.
Definitely.
One of those, that was always the response. But nowadays, I like this, and I will say that I like the fact that there's an awareness of better health options as it relates to mental health, because
definitely,
you know, where your head goes, everything else goes. And mm-hmm. I think that that's a good thing. So as long as, you know what? Everything is good in moderation, right?
You're right. That is correct. I do believe the pendulum may have swung a little too far in that direction, where, you know, nobody wants to stick out a tough moment or, you know, it's easier to leave jobs than to face these challenges that you're going to have in life.
Difficult times. Anyway. Right. That's right.
The reality is you're going to run into that same person at another job or in your life somewhere, and you're going to have to deal with whatever it is you personally don't care for about that person. And usually you find out that it's really something about yourself that you don't like that you see in that person, but that's another discussion.
Oh no, absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. And as a matter of fact, those are things that just follow you around until you actually put in the work to take care of it. And those are some of the things that we talk about even in our corporate training with some of the leaders and actually just the staff at times is how to handle those situations. Because I think it was about 8 years ago, I went to a seminar in Las Vegas for recruiting, and there was a speaker from the U.S. Department of Labor there, I believe is where he was from. And he had said at that point in time that the graduating class that was just coming out was going to have 24 to 26 or 28 job changes in their career. And as recruiters, talent acquisition, what have you, you're going, you got to be kidding me. How am I supposed to tell my client that, listen, that person's going to be there for 6 to 9 months? Think about that.
Yeah.
And, but that reemphasizes or supports what you're saying about making it through those tough times, which is again why I do believe that being armed with the proper tools as it relates to handling stress and things of that nature is so important.
I agree. There is a safety net that a lot of folks have now that maybe didn't exist for us.
Right.
Yeah, their parents have that, you know, that safety net for them if for some reason they're unsuccessful at their first attempt at life. You know, they can come back, regroup, and then go back out again.
Well, I was actually thinking more how human resources has evolved, and they have more tools than years and years ago. That's actually where I thought you were going to go with that. No, I know it's just fine. Mm-hmm. There, because you're right with that, and because you see it in a lot of these polls that are coming out and different information, they're talking about how kids are staying at home and living with their parents or family much longer. 24, 26 is not uncommon. Where, I mean, when I graduated high school, coming back from college was just like, okay, for a summer and then you were gone, you know,
right.
Or you never came back when she left, you know, there's that
exactly
component as well. So after the attracting and we get him in the door, we talk about employee engagement being a very important part of all of this.
Right.
What are your thoughts on employee engagement, and do you have any tools or programs that you've developed over the years to do that?
First of all, with employee engagement, there are a few different types of employees. Some want to engage and want to be part of more than just coming to work, doing your job and going home.
Going home. Right.
And, you know, if human resources was a group of those people who would just come in, do their job and go home, life would be easy. But it's not. There are individuals who have their own desires and they want to go ahead and do other things. With where we are, we want to help the individual be what they can be. So when they come in, we do have training courses and stuff for the individual jobs, but those are, you know, mostly the nuts and the bolts of the jobs. That's where we'll do a bulk of our training. And then, if someone comes in with no skills at all, a good example is our Chicago location. A lot of those folks came in with no skills at all. They were immigrants, they're first generation here. And some came in as material handlers and they worked their ways up to being maintenance people. So if you can provide a career path in manufacturing for individuals to see, lay it all out for them, that is hopefully motivating. But if you're not going to be there for a while, you only see yourself. I mean, the company I'm at, I was only going to be here for a year. It's going on 24 plus years.
Time flies, right?
Yeah, it does. But I've also had multiple jobs in that time. So it seems like I've hopped a lot of jobs, but it's really the same company with just a bunch of different jobs and different responsibilities. But if you can provide that path, we have levels, you're a level one maintenance, level two, level three, to provide that path of growth. And usually what we'll see is, if you're in maintenance, you're next, if you want to be promoted, it would probably be to engineering.
Gotcha.
Which is an option. Gotcha. If, you're in, warehousing, then your next promotion is probably to production. And then if you want, you can get into maintenance or maybe supervision and leads. We try to provide, each supervisor has a lead on their shift. And the lead is basically somebody who is preparing to be a supervisor, right?
Right.
But they also perform their own function on the shift as itself. And therefore, you're always trying to develop the talent that are going to be leaders. Now, what we need to do, I think, is really invest in our, those first line supervisors who are the ones that have the relationships with the hourlies, because that's really what it's about. The hourlies don't think about their work for Phoenix. They think they work for Joe, supervisor on shift one.
Right.
And how Joe goes their day. So, so you're better off getting those folks to start treating people with genuine respect to keep them engaged, and in turn it hopefully fosters a feeling of teamwork, at least.
Sure.
We'd like to say family, but that gets overused. But you are a group, you are a team, and you have a single focus. And at least you're part of something a little bit bigger than yourself.
And retention at that point too is, I guess when you have engagement and you have a path for somebody to walk down professionally and personally, because I do think while the growth can occur more visibly professionally, I think that personally the growth happens along the way too, because
definitely it
just comes up
Up
and up. But where I'm going with that is it then really fosters an environment and an organization that keeps their people, and they do it by taking care of them, engaging them, and you have that generation of employees then 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years. And I know, I'm doing my multiplication tables by five. Look, Mom. But, you know what I mean, though, right?
Because right. Oh, yeah, definitely.
What, it existed, what value? Yeah. What value? And that, to me, and I'll circle back around to your attracting talent, that's got to be a huge plus in that regard. That you can go, okay, well, look at John. John's been here for 25 years. John, why don't you take Bill around the plant,
right,
or Ernesto, why don't you take Sally around the plant and show her around? And I think that there's just real value in that, in keeping that person around for so long, because then there's that whole tribal knowledge thing that kicks in, and if you look at it, there's probably some really great things about it. And then there's some things that you go, it's time to shed some skin and make some changes. And that's no longer a place where we want to be. And
no, as I was talking about our Chicago's, location, those immigrants who ended up, making their way up to maintenance. When we made the announcement that we're closing those areas, we found that they took a pay cut to remain with us instead of going out and finding another job.
Oh, wow.
With maintenance. That is not a choice I would have made. I would have said, see you guys later.
Right.
So you have to ask yourself, why did they do that? Are we that great of a company, or do they lack a little confidence in their skills outside of what they know or whatever it is?
Could be a little bit of both, but
who knows? It is. But sometimes people are Peter principled, and and then you're stuck with that for a while, which is a shame, because that what ends up happening is, people who've been there for 25 years, they get that promotion because they've been there for 25 years, not because they're capable of the job.
Well, it sounds like that was just with the impending draft, or the draft coming up for the NFL. It's just like, it kind of reminds me of that, where you have that, I don't want to say bad draft class, but the draft class that you go, it's okay. And then it turns out didn't necessarily develop to be what you wanted it to be. And then the new coach,
cleans house.
So I got some work to do here. You're gone. Yeah.
Right.
So, which is funny, because the podcast, the title of this episode is Should I Stay or Should I Go? And that is what we're talking about, engagement, retention. And then going back to one of the other challenges that we'll close up on the technical side of this, or the professional side of this.
Yeah. First work, then play.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right. The return to work, that whole hybrid type of deal. Mm-hmm. How is that? Well, as a manufacturing company, I'm sure there's only so many positions that can be that, but what have you seen? What kind of adjustments has your organization made to accommodate those things?
For us, when COVID started, and everybody started getting sent home, it worked out well for us, because the office space that we had was super cramped anyway. And I think people liked the idea of working from home. And then that went on for 2 years. Wow. I mean, and then when you said, hey, come on back, everybody's like, what are you talking about? We had success. We were successful during that time. We don't need to come back.
Couch sufficiently worn in right
exactly,
there.
Exactly. And, you know, that has been difficult because while, you know, the offices that we left, when we came back, we had new offices in a newer facility. And to have, you know, we wanted people back in the office to fill up the space. But the reality is the world changed and you're going to have to accept it. Right. And that is that if you're lucky, you'll find people who want to work hybrid. If you're unlucky, they just want to work at home. And, you know, when you have an organization that has as much tenure as us, that meets a lot of just cultural resistance from ownership on down. You know, there's people who grew up old school and they think you need to be in the office. And so there's that part of it. And you could see companies like who is it? JP Morgan calling everybody back. You know, that's going to force people to leave. And we don't want to do that. We were successful during that time, but we do still want to have some sort of interaction personally. So we've right. just adopted the hybrid model. There are a few exceptions that you know, there's a remote work allowed, but those are the exception, not the rule.
Right.
And
right.
then and then there are still that group of people who still love coming to the office and having that social time. You know, that's you know, when in this what we're talking about now is really focused mm-hmm. on the office. And, you know, what you see there is that there is more and more reliance on the workplace to provide a social environment for your employees. Right. Because they don't maybe necessarily go to a church. They're not a member of a church or some other community organization.
Or a bowling team.
Yeah, bowling team, right. whatever it is, right, you know. Right. And so they're looking for that social interaction at work as well. And those are the people that you see will come in on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And we're filling a need there for them. But, you know. There's not as many as those as you'd like to see, but it, right. we just have to operate in the world in which we are instead of the world in which we want it to be.
Well, and that's a good point. And interestingly enough, I've got a couple of things as it relates to that. So I was working on a project for a company and it happened to be an inside sales role, and talking to this woman, we were talking and I said, well, do you know about ABC company? Oh yeah. ABC company's got a great culture. That's what I want to be a part of. And I said, oh, that's awesome. You're absolutely right. Their culture is fantastic. Da, 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 da. And I said, okay, so this is, you know, standard Monday through Friday, 8 to 4:30 type of role. And I got, well, wait a minute. It's remote, right? And I was just like, no, this is in person. Oh, well, I don't know. I just want remote. And I said, out of curiosity, and I said, you may think I'm being a smart ass by asking this, but I'm being totally serious. How is it that you are able to be a part of that culture, take advantage and love that culture if you're sitting at your desk or in your, right. in your dining room working? Well, you know, we've got, you know, Zoom and technology. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, because, yeah, we're talking via Zoom. so, yeah, I got that. But how does that work? Well, you there's ways. I'll go back to my original question. How are you supposed to get that culture? How are you supposed to dive into that when you're nowhere to be found?
Right.
And they're really, I went around with it, tried to extract that answer out of curiosity for a couple more minutes and I was done. But the other one that came to me when we were talking about that was a gentleman for a maintenance manager role for a company said, well, I'm really interested in hybrid or, you know, a 60-40 remote to, you know, in the plant. And I was like, excuse me, Sammy, but the llama, he's a big hitter.
Yeah.
But no, I was just, what? Can you run that by me again? And I tried not to laugh.
Right.
But it was just like, okay, so how is that supposed to work? Okay, well, you know, they've got these cameras and they've got this, you know, in the everything's computerized these days. And I said, okay, so technology has advanced, but let me tell you, if that technology exists, there's no need for you. And it was just like stunned silence on the other end of the phone. Like, what? What do you mean? So I was just like, yeah, you know what? If I hear of anybody that's looking for a remote maintenance manager, I'll let you know. And if you find one, you tell me, because I'd love to talk to that organization and say, okay, so how's this going to work? Fill me in. But yeah, anyway, yeah. And that's an interesting thing. The hybrid experience, I can definitely see where that would be a benefit in some instances. In manufacturing, obviously, it's
difficult.
Yeah, very, very difficult. There are some office positions and things of that nature that could work. But I too fall into that camp, having worked remotely or out of the house or in the house, excuse me, in an office or even in a brick and mortar in a small office where it was basically just me and an assistant from time to time. I miss that camaraderie. I miss the energy, because that's some heavy lifting that you have to do on a day-to-day basis as it relates to being energized. Now, to that end, with today's technology, and Microsoft has Teams and all the other, you know, Zoom and so on and so forth, there that separation or lack of connection is limited, but it's still different, because it's not like you're walking to the kitchen and, hey, do you have a minute? Bob, do you have a minute? There's that spontaneity.
Yep.
Where I think some real magic happens, you know?
I agree. Yeah. But, and I mean, I'm a remote worker, and I go in, you know, luckily for me, when I travel and I go into a home office there, you know, I'm more working on maintaining relationships.
Right.
I can't imagine starting a relationship remotely.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, I mean, that is just got to be incredibly difficult.
I think so. I don't know that I'd want, well, I say that, and each new relationship I establish is a remote relationship.
It is now, right?
Yeah, it is. And it's, I guess it's just something you get accustomed to in some form or fashion. But
yep.
Anywho. Well, thank you for
spending
the time going through those questions and answering some of those questions. And hopefully that was a benefit to some of our listeners out there as it relates to,
I hope so,
some of their challenges. Now,
yeah, we're all in the same boat. We all, misery loves company. Yeah,
that's right. Tune in if you want to be miserable. Come on.
Well, I'm in HR. Come on over. Be miserable.
That's right. I'm the company you're looking for. I'm Mr. Miserable. Great. So part of the show is music. And actually, and we talk about the four pillars of the show, and music is the tie that binds. And I have mentioned it a few other times on other episodes that I do believe that everyone has a soundtrack to their life.
Sure.
And we're going to go through some of these songs here really quickly.
Okay.
And and talk about them, because I'm curious to know where your soundtrack is and where it ends
up. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. No worries.
You ready?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. Fantastic.
Let's go.
So what was the first song that you heard on the radio that you can remember saying, man, I want to hear that again? And you're scrambling up and down the dial trying to find it.
A song like that, I remember, you know, when Kid Rock's Bum with the Bomb, but Danga Dang Diggy Diggy, whatever that one came out. I loved that one. Was one that I would go ahead, because I wasn't going to buy no CD just yet, because I didn't know if this guy was a flash in the pan or not. So that was the one that I think that I really enjoyed and chased it. I also remember Photograph by Def Leppard. That was another big one. I liked that one. You know, that was the one where you sit there and you're trying to tape it off the FM radio so you can keep playing it.
Yeah. Is that Pyromania?
Yeah, definitely Pyromania. Better of the, probably their best album, I would think. I know a lot of people like Hysteria and Pour Sugar on Me stuff. But I mean, they were pretty good rockers. They weren't just hair metal.
Oh my gosh. As far as this one is one of my favorites. Did your family have a song that everyone would belt out when you went on road trips or on vacations in the family truckster?
No, my parents were radio people. They're
like Paul Harvey type of radio.
My dad, he was News Radio 78, and my mother was a big Steve Dahl, Gary Matthews type of fan. Stephen Gary, but then Kevin Matthews. So, no necessarily, soundtrack that the family had, but my first time experiencing that, I was probably 6 years old, and there was a family across the way that my mother was friends with. So the two, the two ladies would get together, the children would get together, and we'd play. And so we were traveling in their Clark W. Griswold station wagon to whatever we were off to do. And I told you my parents didn't have something you could repeat over and over. Well, this was the first time I was exposed to an 8-track. And the family, the Richardsons, they must have just got like Barry Manilow's greatest hits or something. But they played It's a Miracle over and over and over, and the entire car kept singing. And I admit, I sang along. I was a youngster, of course. But now that I think about it, and I go back and I listen to that song, and man, is it bad. I can't believe that we were actually singing that. But that is really the memory that I have of singing along in the car. We happened to be not with my family, but with my brother, my mother, and then a neighbor lady.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool. I remember I got the chills like, one of those things. So anyway, so let's move along to high school.
Yeah.
Did you have a hype song or an anthem in high school?
In high school, I was going to school in high school in 1984 to 1988. That was when rap was just hitting it. I mean, they didn't even play it on MTV. I was, I guess maybe the original Kid Rock, the guy, the Caucasian who liked rap music. And nice.
Nice baby.
No, I said rap music, not. No,
oh,
not
yeah,
bad.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, no. Okay.
And there's LL Cool J came out with his second album, and the first track is "I'm Bad" by LL Cool J, and I love that song. It gets me hyped. There's a siren going in the background and things like that. So You probably don't recall it, because again,
I do not.
Yes, I thought maybe I pulled that one out, that you may not be ready for that, but
that's okay. Believe me, I'll be listening.
Yeah. LL Cool J. I was really into Houdini and Public Enemy, Eric B.
Oh, yes.
What was really cool about that time was that you remember how, like, you'll watch like that Elvis movie or Johnny Cash movie where all the artists are going together from show to show,
right?
And each artist plays, you know, their set,
their showcases.
Yes. Yeah. And that's how it was for rap at that time. And so you would, you know, when you go in back and look at it, you know, I saw LL Cool J, Eric B and Rakim and Public Enemy and the Beastie Boys all on one stage.
Oh my gosh.
Right. So, you know, that is but that was in the infancy of rap.
Oh my
gosh. My wife and I, she came with me, we were dating, and we would go down to the International Amphitheater. I tell you what, you got to get out of the way, because as soon as the music starts, everybody rushes to the stage. It doesn't matter whether you have a seat or not.
Right.
There were just times that it was quite an experience, and it's a fun thing to think back on, because you don't get that many opportunities to be on the cutting edge of a new genre. And no. And that was my brother and I. We were really into that.
So out of high school, what was your go-to? Did you have any changes?
Out of high school, we were lucky enough to go into another rock genre, right? Early 90s, grunge. I was all on board with grunge.
Nirvana.
Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit was just something you never heard before, right? I mean, I remember standing in the city of Chicago outside the Rock and Roll McDonald's here, and I'm like, what is this? This is something I've never heard before. And so I jumped all in on the grunge, big Alice in Chains fan.
Yeah.
Pearl Jam more than Nirvana. Nirvana, well, they were the pioneers, so we'll give them credit, but I wouldn't say that they make my top five.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's fair. My takeaway from that is Dave Grohl.
There's a guy that I thought it was going to be the bass player, Novacetic or whatever his, I thought he was going to be the guy that ended up doing making something it. after Cobain's unfortunate passing. Yeah.
But it was Dave.
Yeah. And you'd like to think that he's kind of cool. You know what I mean?
Yes.
He's a man's man. Yeah. He's somebody I'd love to hang out with. Yeah,
absolutely. I was just going to say, I would hang with Dave Grohl any freaking day. And you know what? The other thing that I'd love to do is just barbecue with that dude. He is a serious pit master. I don't know if you've ever seen his rig. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So he was involved. I think it was in California when they had the wildfires out there a couple of years back. He brought his rig out and he fed all of the fire and first responders.
Right.
And he was just smoking up ribs and pork butt and all that. He's quite accomplished.
He seems like a genuine guy too, you know, every time you see him, you know, calling kids out of the audience to play, you know.
Yeah.
I watch those YouTube videos.
Me too. Kiss guy. He shredded the guitar.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's just fun to watch, and
absolutely,
and he just seems so genuine. Yeah, he's somebody that now that we're talking about him, he'd make my list of one of those guys you want to have dinner with.
Yeah,
you know, maybe
he's a coffee dude too. I don't know if you knew that. Yeah,
no, I did not. Well, he's from Seattle.
Well, right. I mean, I think that he's got a book called The Storyteller. And it's fantastic, by the way, just a fantastic book. And he mentioned being a coffee dude. So anyway,
there you go.
Then we go on after that little derailment.
Yeah,
we'll go on
Folgers to the next for David Grohl. Yes.
Oh, I don't know.
Don't think he's a Folger? Maybe Maxwell House?
Senka.
And Senka, he's maybe. Going all yeah, a little the instant. Way to the yeah, instant. Let's go instant. Yeah. Yeah.
Instant coffee with Senka. Yeah. So we, as we progress through our life here,
yep.
Did your musical tastes change after joining the ranks of the married or as a parent?
I guess, you know, what I had to learn is to be more tolerant of people's poor taste in music.
Get off my lawn. Get off my musical lawn, yes. Damn you.
You know, I would say that, you know, if it wasn't for my wife and children, I would have no idea what top 40 music sounds like. From probably 2000 through today. While I don't necessarily always enjoy it, it's good for cultural reference. but I have grown in that I've expanded my own personal taste into Red Dirt Country or
interesting.
That's very Southern Rocky. Okay. Southern rock music, not Southern Rocky. I always love the blues. You know, anytime I get a chance to hear something that's, you know, a little bluesy, I enjoy it. I know it's simple, but it's enjoyable.
I'm big fan of the blues. As far as the company's concerned,
yeah,
is there a song that describes your company currently?
Yeah, you know what song I'd choose? I would choose You Can Still Rock in America by Night Ranger. That's correct. Yes.
Yes.
I saw them in concert as well. Starship opened up for them.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, they built that city.
Yes.
Yeah, Grace Slick. She was in her. Yeah, she was on her last legs. But no, it's still Rockin' America.
Very cool.
Yeah, the leader of our company is very enthusiastic and it's infectious, and you know he'll go around call people rock stars and that kind of stuff. But
yeah,
you know, it's kind of cool that you know you can still have a good time, and even though you're in manufacturing. Yeah. You know, it
very cool.
And, you know, our company's been around for a while and it, you know, we're still rocking, even though, you know, many times we probably should not be rocking. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. There you go. So who's your favorite artist and what's the song?
If I have to go, you know, for entire catalog, and I'm going to exclude the Rolling Stones and the Beatles because that's just what. Okay. So I would have to go with ZZ Top. I think it combines a lot of everything. Cool. And the song that really introduced me to ZZ Top and got my led me down the rabbit hole that is would be Sharp Dressed Man.
Very cool. Great song. That's a great song. The last question I have for you is who is tops on your playlist right now? And if we took a look at it, who is it? What is it?
Yeah. I listen mostly to XM.
Okay.
So, right now, or what I've been listening to a lot of is a station called First Wave. And
with that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's all of the songs in the '80s that I rejected. It wasn't rock and roll enough.
Right. Right.
So I am rediscovering, you know, the B-52s and Talking Heads and then, you know, Berlin, the folks over from England. So that's really where I'm at now. But, you know, check back in a couple months. I'll probably be on something else.
Switch it around. Well, yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Well, I'll tell you what, that does it for our show today. And I'd like to thank everyone again for tuning in to the Drop the Needle podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. A big thanks to our special guest, Ken Bauer.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It was very enjoyable.
Thank you. This was awesome. I would also like to remind everyone that as a special gift, we have a toolkit for our listeners, as well as a link to the playlist. So, one other thing, don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe to the Drop the Needle podcast to stay up to date on our latest episodes. Plus, head on over to our show notes, where there's a link where you can grab your toolkit and the episode's playlist. All right, my Drop the Needle posse, like Billy Joel says, from the highs to the lows to the end of our show, this is the end of our show. Until next time, this is Jim Allstott wishing you infinite health, happiness, and the perfect playlist for your life. Thank you again for being the best part of us. Catch you next time.